Taking you back a few years, that is the Allman Brothers Band, and that's one of the tunes I know you're going to be hearing tomorrow, Saturday, October 9th at the Hobart Art Theater, 230 Main Street in Hobart, as the venue presents Midnight Rider. Thought that was a great one to open with. They are a tribute to the Allman Brothers Band, multi-member. They've been around a while. They tour all over, and you can keep up with them online if you go to midnightriderlive.com. You can find out more about them. You can check out some of their videos, their bios, and some of the history they've done. Some of these guys have been around for a while, and they have done some phenomenal work with some major names, including the professor who we're going to bring on right now, Jeffrey Bashaman. Jeffrey, how are you?
Hi, Tom. How you doing? I'm doing fine.
I am doing wonderful, and I'm looking forward to this big show tomorrow. It'll be your first time at the Hobart Art Theater, which is a historic venue. It goes back to the 1940s, and it's now a movie house converted to a concert hall. And I just think that you guys are going to love this place, and I think the place is going to love you.
We're looking forward to it, Tom.
Now, it's been a while since you played out here. We did you guys, I want to say in 2008 18 at the Highland Festival, and then you played 19 at Bulldog Park, I believe. And then COVID hit and kind of threw everybody under the bus.
Yes, it's been an interesting ride.
So how has Midnight Rider been doing during the COVID thing? Have you done any of these virtual performances? Have you been back in action, or is this going to be one of the first shows back?
Well, we had initially kind of set the bar at late August, early September. So that's when we started getting back, and we've been doing some shows and just having a great time. As of a couple of weeks ago, we have a brand new addition to the band who is here with me.
Oh, who's that? And,
his name is Scott Bashman.
Oh, related?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you, Scott?
I'm great. Nice to meet you, and thank you for having us.
Not a problem. What do you do in the band, Scott?
Well, I'm a guitar player. We had a bit of a shuffle. My dad was the original guitar player taking the role of Dwayne Allman, and obviously there's two guitar players in the band, but what happened was the original bass player, unfortunately, with cancer, he's going through treatment at the moment.
Mm.
So my father, who has always been a professional guitar player, but also a professional bass player, he decided to take over the bass role, and then he called me in on guitar. So I'm taking his spot on the Dwayne Allman guitar part.
Okay, so Jeff, you're now the bass man.
I'm the bass dude.
It's interesting. Scott, tell me a little bit about yourself. How long you've been playing music, and why this is a good fit for you.
Sure. Well, I'm about 37 now. I've been playing for almost 20 years professionally. I got started as a session guitar player. I'm from Chicago area, but I was in Orlando, and I got a great opportunity to work in some recording studios when I was about 18 years old, because at that time, there was quite a lot of pop music coming out of Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
So they had some pretty important record labels and management companies and recording studios there. Somebody called me in for a session, and I sort of created a great network of people to work with over the years. So I started doing session work in New York and Los Angeles and Miami, pretty much as a triangle of work. I just got back about a month ago from Paris. I was fortunate enough to get a project over there, even with the pandemic going on. And so I've sometimes done some live work, concert work with different bands, but I've always primarily been a session guitarist. And so when Dad needed a guitar player, he knew he could count on me, and I'm actually really happy to do it. We've done two shows so far, and they've been fantastic. And we, as a band, we're really well synced, so I'm really happy to play with everybody.
So are you living back here now full-time, or are you just kind of crashing on Dad's couch for a while?
I've always been a Midwesterner. I grew up in a town called St. Charles, Illinois.
Okay.
And the likeness to Hobart is that our local concert theater also used to be a movie theater. So it was converted for the same purpose. And so that's something we're looking forward to for Hobart. And so because I grew up in the Midwest, I've always considered it my home base. So I've always kept my residence
okay.
in Illinois. And for that reason, I've had to travel a lot. Over the years, and the pandemic, of course, just like with live shows, the studio session work has been, you know, it's been tough last year and a half. A lot of the projects have been suspended and everything. So it was nice for me to get some opportunities through the pandemic, like I mentioned, going to France, because I've constructed a good network of people. But just as musicians, we're just so happy to get back now that a lot of people have been vaccinated and we're out playing shows, doing sessions and everything. It's a great time for musicians to sort of get the flame back, if you will.
Okay. So are you an Allman Brothers fan like the rest of the guys in the band? Did you grow up with this music?
I did. I'll tell you a quick story that to me is the most important thing for why I respect their music so much. My father, as a professional bass player, was a session guitarist and bassist in Los Angeles. And then he moved to the Midwest when he had a family and I was a small child, and he continued to do a lot of music shows in the Midwest area. And there was a certain moment where he actually was working with Gibson guitars for a long time.
Hmm.
And so what happened was the bass player for the Allman Brothers unfortunately passed away. And there was a moment where they were looking for another bass player. And my dad had known one of the tour managers for the Allman Brothers. And the tour manager knew of my dad's bass playing, so he recommended that my dad come down to audition for the Allman Brothers. And my father made a very important decision because I was very young at the I think I was about 4, 5, 6 years old. And he didn't want to do extensive touring and miss my childhood. So he, instead of taking the audition, he recommended a bass player that also worked at Gibson Guitar at that moment in time. He recommended the bass player to be there. And in fact, this became the bass player of the Allman Brothers. He got the gig. So I always told that story. For me, it's really important because it showed me how much my father wanted to be there for me because he loved the Allman Brothers music, his favorite band. And he literally got the opportunity of a lifetime to join, or at least audition.
Right.
And he gave up the spot because he wanted to be with me. So because of that, when I hear an Allman Brothers tune since I'm a kid, it's for me how much love and respect I have for my father.
That had to be a tough call. You know, you got your family and you got your passion. And, I had to make a similar decision. It wasn't quite as wow as that one. But, sometimes you just got to make the right call.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was gut-wrenching, to say the least.
So,
things turned out, if I had it to do all over again, I'd make the same decision.
Right. Well, you're still playing the music now. Let's talk about Midnight Rider. You are the musical director as well as the new bass player. How did Midnight Rider come together?
Well, that's kind of a good story as well. It started out as many bands do. A few guys get together, you know, let's see what happens. And so somebody I'd never met before, Mason Clare, lead singer, was at that session. And, it was a very good vibe. Things felt great. As we went through and just kind of jammed through a few songs, I'm thinking to myself, man, this guy sounds like Greg Allman. Mm-hmm. He even looks a little bit like him. So I said, do you know any Allman Brothers songs? And he rolls up his sleeve and has the logo of the Allman Brothers band tattooed on his arm.
Yeah, I guess he's a fan, huh?
Yeah, I guess that would kind of, tip the scales in that direction. So it just started evolving from there. You know, it then became my mission to pack the band with some of the finest players in our immediate in the Chicago area that we could find. I've been wanting Scott to join the band, but his life as a session musician has been so hectic over the last few years, you know. But
right.
I actually wanted that from the beginning. Now we're all together, and we have added a drummer. We're now a 9-piece.
Wow, when I first met you, you were 7-piece. Then I heard from you and said we're 8-piece, and I saw the new pictures. Now I'm hearing 9-piece? Holy cow.
Yes, we're trying to follow, you know, the Allman Brothers just evolved, had so many reinventions of themselves over the years we're trying to kind of cover that, to cover it accurately.
Right.
You
know. Wow. So that's a big outfit to travel with. Are you doing, obviously COVID's kind of kiboshed a lot, but you guys have done a fair amount of touring around the Midwest. I don't know if you've gone further than that. What's it been like as far as now that the COVID situation is kind of subsiding a little bit? Are you going to start playing out a lot more? Are you playing outside of the region?
We're still doing Midwest for right now.
Okay.
We will probably regroup near the end of the year and set the schedule for next year. I know just when it had hit, we had played the House of Blues here in Chicago and then Caesar's Palace down in Louisville. We were fielding some offers from House of Blues New Orleans and their sister club in Baton Rouge, which Bashaman is the French name. I'm literally the first person born outside of Louisiana in 300 years.
Wow.
In our family. So I was joking with them that I could fill the place with relatives.
Now, that's got to say something about the DNA, because New Orleans area, I mean, that is steeped in it.
Yes. Yes, it is. And I grew up in Cincinnati as well. Included in that tour was to be Bogart's in Cincinnati, which is kind of a sister to House of Blues type venue. So,
right.
You know, it was, I'm sure you've heard lots of stories of woe, but in terms of your question, yes, there's still quite a log jam, and everybody's trying to struggle back to their feet. It was a disruption that I think will continue for a while. I know a lot of venues are trying to honor contracts that they had before the pandemic. So I think that's causing the log jam, but we'll get through it.
Okay.
Things will be fine, and we'll get back up. We have been doing some traveling over to Western Illinois, and did Martinsville, which is down by Indianapolis, about a month ago, and we just did the 2 weeks ago Bolingbrook Performing Arts Center, and in Round Lake Beach we did the Civic Center Amphitheater last week.
Now, how is the new member fit in? Was he on all these gigs? Is it jiving? Is it gelling well?
Oh, it's great. Tom, I've spent probably 80% of my career really as a bass player. Scott is just the only word I can think of is elite guitar player. And last week especially was just magical.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Now, one of the things
he's a lot better than he's telling you. He's better than me. I guarantee you.
No. It's not true. When I'm around him, I tell people I'm a bass player.
All right. Now, Jeff, I'm looking at your bio sheet here. You've actually done some shows with Butch Trux of the Allman Brothers, as well as other major players in there. Steve Morris, B.B. King, Billy Preston, all those guys, Lowell George. Tell me a little bit about, were you a jobber, like a touring musician? Did you do sessions? What brought you to the ranks of some of these great players?
Well, I started out as I mentioned, I grew up in Cincinnati.
Right.
And I was with a band that pretty much toured around the country called Mad Anthony. And A&M Records got wind of us. This was back. I'm dating myself now. It's back in, I believe it was 76, 77, in that area. And A&M Records brought us out and signed us to an introductory deal with A&M Records. And often that will happen. A record company will sign three or four different bands with really the only intention of putting out one.
Mm-hmm.
This little trio from England called The Police was the one they ended up doing. So,
oh wow,
my band Mad Anthony kind of lost out there. But in the midst of doing that, I started working with some of the staff producers at A&M and some of the freelance producers who moved from record label to record label and things. So I became an LA session player. Did that for several years, and that's where I encountered. I also did some touring with Billy Preston. I lived down the street from Lowell George, and he was working on a solo album. That's right before he passed away, and was working with him on that. And I was to be the bass player for the live tour. Unfortunately, he passed away on his last tour with Little Feat.
Now, was that the Thanks, I'll Eat It Here album?
Yes.
Oh, exactly. Wow. What a great record that was.
Oh, yeah. yeah, anything Lowell George has ever been involved with, I've been a huge fan of, you know. So it was, I kind of had to leave Billy Preston's situation to play with Lowell, but, you know, it just had an unfortunate outcome. Hey, right. That's life. You know?
Right.
I then came back to Cincinnati, or to Chicago area, and got hired by Gibson, and they sent me out to the Pacific Northwest. And I was with Gibson for many years, and that's how I encountered, you know, you do clinics and things of that nature and special shows, and I'd be recommended, you know. So there's lots of different ways that I would cross paths with those people.
Right.
But my Gibson affiliation certainly had a lot to do with it as well.
And if I could interject, Tom,
sure.
If I tell you an interesting story about my dad when he was an LA session musician. So sometimes people ask me, Scott, that's interesting. You're a session guitar player. Your dad was also a session guitar player. You know, is that why you got into it? And I always say no, because, you know, my dad's really passive. He never put me in a particular direction or another. He's also the type that never brags or never tells any interesting stories. So this one I didn't learn until many, many, many years later, but I'm going to share it with you.
Okay.
My dad was a Mr. Fix-It. And what that means is, at that time period, this is pre-disco, they didn't have any computers in the recording session to fix what might have gone wrong on tape. If you recorded, you didn't do your part correctly, they couldn't fix it. They did have a technique for splicing tape and putting it back together for some cases. But if it was a really bad take overall, you just had to throw it away. And recording studios are notoriously expensive, so every day it's thousands of dollars. And so for the producer, this is a big challenge. If you've got a band in there, they've signed to the record deal, so you have to use those musicians because they're part of the band. And you've got maybe a bass player or guitar player that has never done this before, the recording aspect of things, and they're really struggling on a daily basis, especially if they're having parties in the studio. Well, it's costing the producer and the budget for the record company quite a lot of money every day that they have to throw out the tape. So what they started doing at that time was they'd call in people like my dad, the producer who worked with A&M Records. He'd call my dad at, you know, 10 o'clock at night and say, Jeff, come in for a session tonight at midnight. And dad would secretly record the bass part. And then the band would come in the next day and go, oh, that's what we recorded yesterday. And the producer would just say, yep.
Wow. You were the fix-it man. I like that.
Right. And word kind of gets around, and that's what caused me to cross paths with a lot of different people I was very blessed to play with.
Amazing. Know? I didn't realize that. That's got to be kind of a kick in the head, though. And he's like, man, that's me playing, but nobody knows it, you know? I hope they paid you well for that.
Yes, they did, but you signed paperwork, so, you know.
Right, so you can't tell us who you replaced. But that's great. Now, you guys are out there playing. You're going to do a show here tomorrow. How long is a typical Midnight Rider show? And is it like the Almonds where you just play straight through and do these amazing concert sets? Or do you do sets or you know, concert breaks, things? What's the show like? Give me the structure.
That's a great question, Tom. Thank you. So we have several different durations. For example, we did a 45-minute set a couple weeks ago. We did then a 2.5-hour set following week, which had a break in between of about 30 minutes. And that was because it was a festival, so they wanted, you know, a few announcements to take place in between basically 2-hour and 15-minute sets. When we're coming to Hobart, we're going to be doing 1.5 hours straight through.
Okay. And
like you said, everybody, we would love that they get there early because your previous guest, wow. Amazing musician.
Oh, so you were listening.
Oh, that's definitely something to catch. I'm gonna be watching that show too.
Yeah, he's great, and the whole Steepwater band. I don't know, Jeff, if you've ever had a chance to work with them, but they are phenomenal.
I haven't had the pleasure, but I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So you guys are gonna do 90 minutes straight, and then obviously, if the crowd is stomping their feet, maybe do a short encore or something. Typically, is that the way you guys do it? Is a straight concert set like the Allmans, or because you're not a bar band? I mean, you don't do like 3 45-minute sets with breaks and all that, do you? I mean, you're a concert band.
We're a concert band, exactly.
Okay.
We do mostly theaters, House of Blues type venues. So it's very much a concert performance.
That was
in the design and construction of the band.
All right. I want the listeners to actually hear you guys. We opened up with Midnight Rider from the Allmans. We have your sizzle reel here from your website. Is it okay if we play that?
Oh, absolutely.
And you mentioned House of Blues. One of the clips from this video is at House of Blues. So, listeners, you're going to hear a little sizzle reel of the actual Midnight Rider band that you'll be seeing at the Hobart Art Theater tomorrow. This is them doing the Allmans. We'll be back with Jeff and Scott after this.
I said it might be a man. Lord said it might be a man. Oh, baby, I just don't know.
Getting tied to the whipping post, that is Midnight Rider, the band you're going to see tomorrow at Hobart Art Theater. Just wanted to let people know that this is not a watered down, there's so many tributes out there. Everybody's got a tribute band, and it just seems like sometimes you hit the gold and you grab the brass ring, or you hit the note, as the Allmans might say, and other times it's just like, really? Really? That was supposed to be so-and-so? With these guys, you get the real deal. This is as close as you're going to get to the Allman Brothers, in my opinion. I have had the opportunity to see them perform twice, and both times was shorter sets than I would have liked because of festival situations. But this time, they're the headliner. They're going to get to do whatever they want, so it's going to be like taking a little trip to the Beacon Theater in New York and kind of experiencing what it was like to do an Allman Brothers concert. My guests are Scott and Jeff Basherman. They are members of Midnight Rider. Jeff is also the music director. Guys, I'm going to throw this to either of you. Do you have a personal favorite in the show that you look forward to getting to, a certain song that is kind of your favorite moment in the show, whether it's because you particularly shine or the band particularly shines?
That is a very difficult question, Tom, because there are so many, you know, I grew up with this music. There's so many, for me personally, it's a lot of the instrumental stuff, because an instrumentalist is a bass player. There are a lot of wonderful places to open up and just not, you know, thump 1, 2, 3, 4 kind of thing. And really, you know, explore all kinds of modal and, you know, more challenging type music. So mine would be Jessica or Whipping Post or In Memory of Elizabeth Reed. I don't know, Scott, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd have to say it's not a particular song, but what's interesting about the Allman Brothers music is they have incredible vocal melodies, but then there's these long spaces where it's all about the instrumentation. So you get these drum solos, you get these guitar dual leads where they're both playing the same part. It's in harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's these fantastic transitions back. And so I can tell you that the music is comfortable. It's a wonderful rock and roll music, but there's these elements of jazz and precision that it creates a tension where it builds up and it builds up and it builds up. And then you hear the two guitars play the exact same thing at the exact same time. And then there's that sense of accomplishment. And then, you know, the crowd cheers. And I've always found that fascinating with Allman Brothers music, how they constructed that. And then when we play it, for me, the special moments are when we hit those precise moments together, especially with my dad on bass, because there's the family aspect, if you will, a little bit like the Allman Brothers Band. You've got two people of the same family. And so I love that. But we also have two drummers. And to get two drummers to be in sync during their solos and add a percussionist on top of that, so you've got three rhythm people synchronizing, it's just phenomenal. So sometimes we sit as the guitar players, we stop playing and we turn for the drum solo and we literally watch them. And I'm fascinated every time. So instead of it being a particular song, I would say my favorite aspect is the complexity of the music, although it remains a really comfortable, you know, groove-based music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we actually call them the percussionists are weapons of mass percussion.
I like that. Like the Allmans, do you guys do a lot of improvisation, a lot of freestyling, a lot of jamming? Because, you know, you'll hear the songs on the records and it's like, okay, this is a 4-minute song. And you see the Allmans play it and it's a 16-minute song. What is the balance of improvisation versus playing it like the records?
We do exactly that, because if you follow the 45-year history of the Allman Brothers, they reinvented themselves so many times. There's any given song, there's probably 50 or 60 versions of it in different arrangements.
Right.
And the one constant that remains throughout is everybody on stage is given, you know, space to create in between the structured, you know, the bones of the composition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the guitars come together and play in harmony. And so on and so forth. You know, everybody gets that spot, and they get to play in that spot as long as they want, and you know, then pass it off to the next person.
And Tom, if you'd like, I can tell you the secret for how we pass it off.
Okay. I was just going to say, sometimes, you know, you're watching, whether it's a jazz band or a great jam band, and as an audience member, you're looking, it's like, okay, we know the song. And then it goes into the stratosphere with all this, like, improvisation. And somehow, you guys all come back to the same note, same page at the right time to bring it home. And that has always baffled me. Like, you're all out there just doing your thing. Half the time, your eyes are closed. You're getting into the moment. And then suddenly, it all just gels back together. So tell me that secret, Scott.
It's my pleasure. And for anybody listening, spoiler alert, because I'm definitely going to give away the magic behind the show. But it's my pleasure to share this with you. So it's called a cue. And what happens is, if everybody has their cues down, then you can take a solo for however long you would like, but then you play a particular thing within your solo that the rest of the band knows, they're familiar with it, and they consider that to be your cue saying, I'm done with my solo. But it's fashioned in a way where we harmonize a lot of the cues. So for example, I'll be doing a solo, maybe I want to do it as a short solo, but maybe I want to do this time a long solo. Well, the other guitar player knows, as soon as he hears my cue, and it's going to sound like it's part of my solo, I'm improvising the rest of the solo.
Mm-hmm.
He'll wait, he'll let me do the cue a couple of times, and then he'll join me and harmonize the cue with me, and then the whole band is hearing the harmonization of the cue, and then they cue into the next part, the vocalist comes up, starts singing. And it's actually, it's rooted in jazz music. That's the thing that the Allman Brothers took from jazz music that's so fascinating because, you know, sometimes you see, for lack of a better term, a jam band.
Right.
And you never really know how long that's going to go or not go. But there's often these awkward transitions where somebody took a solo, but they're not really sure as a band, what do you do next? And the Allman Brothers never had that awkward pause because they really nailed their cues. And they took that from jazz soloists. This goes back to the 30s. And so that's the secret behind the magic.
Okay. Well, thank you for explaining that, because to me that was always fascinating to see it just go off in all different directions and then just come back so smoothly for the finale. And so now we know.
Yeah.
We peeked behind the curtain.
Yeah. Well, you can look for it now. It's a little bit like if somebody gave you a tip with cinema, and then next time you watch a movie, you can try to find it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the fact that there are so many tribute bands out there. Of every, you could swing a dead cat and hit three tribute bands anywhere you go. So let's figure out why the fascination with tribute bands, and how does the patron, the audience member, the fan, separate? How do you get the, you know, how do you separate the good from the bad? Is there a secret to that? There's got to be other Allman Brothers tributes out there. And you guys are the best I've seen, and you sound so much like them. How do you sell yourself as we're not one of those?
It is a challenge. And you're right. There are so many different tribute bands out there. The difference between them is the caliber of musicians. I mean, that's the foundation of your house.
Right.
How you communicate it out there, you know, that is more of a challenge. But there are some. I know we worked in Martinsville, Indiana with a Creedence Clearwater band.
Mm-hmm.
Called Creedence Revival. It was just incredible. I mean, you'd close your eyes and, you know, you'd swear to God that was John Fogerty up there and you know, they were just fantastic. So I think if I to answer your question, you know, for your listeners, go to your theaters. They're much more selective in terms of who they hire, how they hire, their due diligence, and that sort of thing. I would say especially in the theaters and the festivals as well, you know, but that would be my answer.
All right. Now, have you had any feedback from anyone related to the Allman Brothers camp, whether it's, the Allman Betts group guys or, Trucks, any of those folks, Warren Haynes, Government Mule, any of those bands, have they ever seen you? Have they ever commented? Have they ever given you any feedback on how well you replicate the Allman Brothers?
From some of the peripheral people, unfortunately, the people I knew, Butch Trucks, I had done session work back in the 70s with him. So
right.
I had known him for years. When they played a show at Poplar Creek, I was working in a division for Gibson
in the Chicago area, so I would always go backstage and say hi. And I'd known Dickie for a while, and of course Alan Woody, who was the bass player also for Government Mule. Scott was telling me the story earlier. That's the friend of mine that I recommended go take my place at the audition.
Right.
So unfortunately, they passed away. Now, we do two songs, I'm sure you're familiar with, Jessica and Blue Sky.
Okay.
And I am friends with, we communicate mostly over Facebook, you know, as people do so much these days. But I communicate with Dickie Betts' ex-wife, Sandy Blue Sky, and his daughter, Jessica Betts.
Okay.
We've had some good feedback from them.
Have they come out to see you?
We haven't been in an area where they are. They're on different sides of the country. You know, they're mother and daughter, but they've seen videos and, you know, sent back some very complimentary, very grateful. Kirk West has been out. Yes, he was their stage manager for many years, and
right.
He's just has some very wonderful things to say about us, which we're really, really grateful for. So, yeah.
All right, wonderful. What have we not let the listeners know about Midnight Rider that you would like them to know before they come to see the band? Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you think they need to know about?
Yeah, thank you, Tom. I'd say back to your question. Well, you were mentioning that you could swing a dead cat hit free tribute band.
And, right.
And the question was, why do you think that they're so prevalent these days? What's making that so popular? And I would say that truly there was a golden era of rock and roll. It's something that in the history books is going to be celebrated 100 years, 200 years from now. And what's so interesting right now is that people wish to continue to have the experience. And so the experience needs to be, you know, in a theater, a festival, big stage, lights with the entire setting on the stage, you know, lava lamps and everything that made that era, the psychedelic rock and the fusion of jazz and the new songs
and the country
and the country and rock. Everything was being fused. Yeah. And so when you go to a show and you want to relive that experience, just as if you want to rewatch your favorite movies from childhood. You really want to be surrounded by it. You want the lights, you want the decoration, you want people to be dressed that way. And the whole reason is to get the experience. You know, if any one of those elements are not there, then you feel like you're not getting the experience. And I think that's also to your other question about the quality or how do you choose between tribute bands. But I think it's really, can they deliver the experience?
Okay.
And so we work really hard on that, and we're very proud of our progress on that because it comes back to honoring that golden era. So I would say that's probably the best way to communicate, in my opinion. You know, why do we want that experience? Because it makes us feel very good.
Okay. And again, you can keep up, listeners, at MidnightRiderLive.com. And I do recommend that you surf over there and check out what the band has. It'll make you appreciate the performance all the more because these guys, as I said, are the real deal, as close as you can get. I've seen them. I enjoy them. I'm happy to be able to bring them to the Hobart Art Theater, and I hope the crowds come out for it. I know that everyone's still a little bit afraid with the COVID situation, and it is an indoor show. But space yourselves out. Wear a mask if you are comfortable with that, if you need that. That's okay. We'll take care of you. We'll do what we can. And remember, there are also plenty of tickets left. It starts at 7:30 with Jeff Massey of the Steepwater Band, a hometown guy who has traveled the world. And don't be late, and just get here and enjoy this show. And I will be your MC tomorrow, so we're going to have a good time. It's going to be rockin' Southern blues, and we are going to pay tribute to the Allman Brothers with, in my opinion, the greatest Allman Brothers tribute out there. Jeff, Scott, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Ben. Oh, you bet. It's a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you again, my friend.
I know, and you got to stop by my record store. It's right next door to the theater and hang out and see some things.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely, yes.
All right.
We'll be there.
All right. MidnightRiderLive.com is where you'll find them. And let's close out now with one of the songs they mentioned. This is Blue Sky by the actual Allman Brothers. Stay safe, everybody. Chef Nick's coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow at Hobart Art Theater for Midnight Rider and Jeff Massey. River, sweet love, they just keep on.